Thrilled to have Linda Scruggs with me, who is a fertility nurse, and you do virtual coaching, and I'm probably saying it all wrong, but like you are just all over the place with your knowledge, sharing it. You've been doing virtual. Is it called coaching or virtual? What exactly are you?
I kind of steer away from the coaching thing. It's just I'm a fertility nurse. I'm a registered nurse. But I've been consulting.
Consulting, that's the word.
Consulting for years.
Okay. And so were doing, you were ready for COVID before COVID hit because you were already doing the Zoom stuff.
Yes, because with fertility treatment, most of it's on the women. The women are going through it, giving themselves the injections, all that kind of stuff. And they're home doing it. And so for a long time, when I was working in a fertility clinic in Manhattan, it was one of those things like after hours, like, can I talk to you? Can I FaceTime you? Can I chat with you or text you? So I started realizing the need was really more at home. And then everybody opens up more. We become fast friends. We talk about everything. And so I went out on my own about 5 years ago and I've been doing it ever since.
Okay. So tell me what you have learned in all of this. And because my husband and I struggled to get pregnant. We had a couple miscarriages and my progesterone was super low and I ended up taking progesterone. And then after our last miscarriage before Sunny was born, my gynecologist was like, I think you're probably going to have to get on fertility. Like we've tried a year now, it's not really working. And so I didn't have to go through the fertility process because we did end up getting pregnant right after that, just miraculously. But we were in that struggle for a year and it was devastating. It was a devastating place to be. So you are right in the middle of that with women.
Yeah. So a lot of times people think fertility nursing is super fun and it can be. Like saying you're pregnant to somebody is wonderful, but there's the other side to it, which you've obviously experienced. And recurring loss is so hard. And that emotional cycle and it just being a roller coaster ride and all those things. And infertility, which I don't like to use because I feel like it's a stop word, but infertility is really like that you've been trying for a certain amount of time unsuccessfully having unprotected sex and you can't get pregnant. And even though it's online now and there's so many opportunities to talk about it with other women, getting started is so hard still. It's like, who do you go to? Do you go to reproductive endocrinologists? Do you talk to your GYN and spin your wheels there for a certain amount of time? And so helping to just get through all that information, break it down, make it easy to digest, talk to everyone who's in a different situation or scenario, age-wise, which plays a factor, relationship-wise, which plays a factor, waiting for the right moment. There's so much to it. And so I just love talking with women, chatting with them, really becoming friends. I've had so many women over the years who have said, I am telling you more than my own sister. You know more about my life right now than anyone else, because that's just the safe zone. And so the one thing I've taken away from just being in it for so long and seeing everything is that you never know. Life will throw you a loop. You might think it's going to be easy and it's really hard, or you might think it's going to be hard and it's not so bad. And so it's like you said, you just never know. I thought I was going to have trouble getting pregnant. I had my first when I was 33 and my second when I was 37. And I didn't have any trouble, but I had really tough pregnancies. Struggled, had bed rest, had a partial abruption. So the placenta kind of separates a little bit from the uterus and had to kind of lay around and just every day wasn't sure if I was going to have to go in for a C-section. Made it to 37 weeks with both my kids, but I had postpartum issues. I had 6 blood transfusions between both of my C-sections.
Wow.
I had 2 with my son and 4 with my daughter because I hemorrhaged and we didn't know this was going to happen. But it was just one of those things where you think you're doing the right thing. And I know so many women who are I'm taking my vitamins and I'm exercising and I'm doing yoga and I'm doing all these things. And everything is being done that could be possibly done. And there's still something that's going to come in there and trick it up. And so we talk a lot about just being able to not hand, how to control things you can't control, being mindful of all these things and just doing the best you can and rolling with it and all that kind of stuff. There's such an emotional component to it.
So you,
as you know.
Oh yeah. So you said a lot of women struggle with getting started. And I think that's a really great place to dive into a little bit, because I feel that same way. It's like you definitely lean on your OBGYN to give you direction, but then there comes a point where they have to hand you off if it's not working. So what do you suggest are the first steps to do? If you've been trying to get pregnant, it's not happening, you're struggling, it's looking like you have fertility issues, what does a woman do at that point?
That's a great question. So if a woman has talked to her GYN, has been trying for a while, maybe has even done a few IUI cycles, like inseminations, but hasn't taken any... Sorry about that.
All good.
My dog just walked by and tipped it over. Has tried to conceive unsuccessfully.
So IUI
and is kind
first,
of at their wit's end.
You think IUI is the first?
If step. They've done, like sometimes gynecologists will do inseminations and say, give it like 6 months and see. And while I think that's okay for some women, depending on your age, depending on honestly, how quickly you want to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. If you're waking up and you're like, I need a baby in my belly. Mm-hmm. And you want to fast track this, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And so contacting an RE, which is a reproductive endocrinologist, at a fertility center and going in for a consultation, I think is a wise choice, because the time that it can take can be much longer than one expects. You know, they might think, well, I'm going to do a fertility cycle, so now I'll just get pregnant. And sometimes it doesn't work that way. Mm. And so having a workup versus guessing or trying certain things for a while and then not succeeding and building up your frustration level while that's happening.
And then you get super discouraged and stressed, which
yes.
doesn't help at all.
At all. And so when you go for a consultation, you know, I know women who have been in the fertility kind of roller coaster ride for almost a year, but haven't had a consultation yet, haven't had a workup yet. So they don't even know if there's any factors. So it could be that, you know, there's some hormonal issues, or she has something like PCOS, like polycystic ovaries, or something like that. Or there could be a male factor. If she has a partner and she's married and there's some kind of sperm issue that they don't know about, and the only way they're going to know is if they test. So they go to a fertility center, they see a reproductive endocrinologist, and they draw baseline hormone levels, like day 3 hormone levels on day 3 of your cycle. And they check your estrogen and your progesterone and your FSH and your LH. And they get this diagnostic picture of hormone levels. Is everything in a normal range? Okay, good. So we could kind of check that off the list, that we're still within a normal range for whatever age we're at. There's no diminished ovarian reserve, meaning like premenopausal issues or things like that. And then they'll do a semen analysis and recommend it if there is a partner, because we want to look at the whole picture. Is there enough sperm? You know, is the volume okay? Is the shape of the sperm okay? Or did he have like 3-headed? Sperm going on. There's so many things we could be. But once we know that, we can deal with it, and then we can go forward knowing what's going to help. What's the best chances of conceiving? Is it IVF cycle? Is it maybe, you know, like a low dose IVF or something like that? Or maybe it's not IVF at all. Maybe it's just timing, you know, knowing when to try during the month using an ovulation predictor kit. So there's a lot of options, but it's just, to me, if you're really ready and you want to get going on this, going ahead and equipping yourself with as much information as possible, just getting those tests done can paint a really clear picture of what the reality is in terms of where you might have to go.
And that's at a fertility
clinic. Sometimes you don't know.
And that would just be going to a fertility clinic and just getting a baseline test to check your levels and getting your partner's sperm tested just to check your levels. So then you know what you're dealing with. Okay.
Yeah,
so
they'll do a history and physical.
I have another question. What happens if all your levels are kind of coming back fine? Everything seems fine. You're doing the ovulation. You're checking your ovulation. And I would love to know when the ideal time to have intercourse is, when you're trying to have a baby, like when that moment is based on your ovulation. But what happens if you're doing all of that and you're still not getting pregnant?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's something called idiopathic infertility, which is just unexplained. And sometimes that does happen. And, you know, along the lines of baseline hormone levels, semen analysis, the standard is that, along with a diagnostic test that checks your uterus. It's an X-ray. It's called an HSG, hysterosalpingogram, and they basically inject a dye into the uterus and visualize to make sure the fallopian tubes are open, the uterus doesn't have any.
I got that.
The cramping and all that kind of stuff that comes with it. Yeah, it's not fun. No. But it's one of those things that helps to see, okay, is there a reason for recurring losses, right? Is there something going on that's preventing it? Having a transvaginal ultrasound at the fertility center is something they'll do where nobody even knows, like transvaginal ultrasound, where they insert a small probe in and actually visualize to see, okay, what's the follicle count or your egg count in that month? And what's your uterine lining? Do you need to take progesterone? Is there things like that with all of that information? But if someone is not getting pregnant, they've done those tests, their reproductive endocrinologist is going to probably recommend that they do an IVF because it's going to help bypass some of the challenges. It's going to help recruit those eggs. It's going to help choose great sperm, hopefully get them together, make beautiful embryos. Nowadays, you can check the embryos for genetic abnormalities to pick almost like the best ones. It's the survival of the fittest. And then transfer in which ones have the best chance. So there's still uncertainty in it, but there's so much that can be done these days. And then on the opposite end, if someone's just home and they're like, I am not ready to hear any of that. I just want to do an ovulation predictor kit, pick it up at Walgreens. Yes, and have sex. If you have a normal cycle and it's 28 days and you start testing around day 11, 12, and you get that smiley face.
Mm-hmm. Not
you
want to
go ahead.
Do you want the blinking one or the non-blinking one? Which one means you're ovulating?
So I'm all about the easiest OPKs, the easiest ovulation predictor kits, where it's like you are ovulating or you're not. Not like the maybe it's getting a little bit darker, but I'm not really sure kind of thing. So there's two parts of the timing. It's you want the sperm there before the egg is released. Yes.
Okay, but not too much before. So it's like
not too much before.
Like a perfect dance.
So it's like, let's take a 28-day cycle. If there's a partner, right? Obviously, there's not like a, you know, donor sperm kind of situation with insemination. Just good old-fashioned, we're doing this at home.
Okay.
Usually for men, you want 2 to 4 days abstinence. You don't want him like saving up 2 weeks. It doesn't make them stronger, it makes them weaker.
Why is that?
So you want the swimmers, because it has like more debris and bacteria and things like that. It slows down. It just doesn't benefit it in any way.
So you need it built up a little bit, but you still want it, you don't want it too built up because then it gets junky.
Like happy medium, yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly. So you basically want 2 to 4 days abstinence.
Before you ovulate.
For the ideal sperm sample. So if you know you have 28 days cycle, you know you're going to ovulate maybe around between days 12 to 14 in an ideal world. So somewhere around day 9 or 10, make sure that he's taken care of, things are good. And then he could hold off for 2 days and then go ahead and have sex.
Okay, so what if you are really trying to get a certain gender? Are there any tips? Like if you were really wanting a girl or you're really wanting a boy, like I heard girls swim slower, but they live longer, got boy sperms swim faster, but they die quicker. So it's like, is that all just urban legend or is there truth to any of it? I heard like doing it doggy style.
If I
have a boy.
Yeah. So if I lined up like 150 of the top reproductive endocrinologists in this country, they would all kind of give varying answers and things to this. If I had the answer, things would be good. But yeah, it's one of those things. I have heard that depending on position from behind, it could be one way or the other. I don't know that there's any data, like clinical, like let's get real and not do Dr. Google, but like actual clinical data to say that one way is better than the other. It's the same thing with if you have sex and not to get up or to tilt your pelvis back so that it kind of, In reality, after inseminations, at the top fertility centers in the country, it's not like they say, don't move for 30 minutes. Let's make sure the sperm really got there because it's going, if an insemination, it's getting injected up into the uterus. Mm-hmm. And so It doesn't make a difference, but it might make us feel better, right? And I'm yeah. all for making, if it makes us feel better, like leaning to one side or do it, you know, so many things. I'm all for it as long as it's like safe.
Yeah.
You're right.
I hear you. So another question yeah. I have is I have had several friends who have done IVF, and a lot of them have struggled with the spiritual element of that because mm-hmm. they feel that an embryo is actually a full life, and they feel like they need to have all of these embryos that they have made, or they struggle with not having them all. And how do you walk that walk with people?
That's a really great question. And that is something that is often neglected in fertility centers and not discussed at all. So you're making on the spot decisions that you're going to have to really sit with and decide whether you're comfortable with it. So not getting into a debate over the embryo itself. Some people have certain beliefs, some people don't. Some believe that there's potential for life, and then that potential, then a lot has to happen for it actually to become life. So mm-hmm. some people feel that way, some people don't. Whatever it is, that's fine. But walking through someone that is going to be going through this, there's going to be decisions that do need to be made that they want to be comfortable with. One of them is when you have that the process done and you have a retrieval, and then you go ahead and have your transfer of embryos, you have the option to cryopreserve those and freeze them. And that might save you a ton of money and a full IVF cycle if that cycle isn't successful. So if for some reason that cycle fails, you have these embryos already made. You don't have to go ahead and stimulate your ovaries and get the eggs and have the retrieval. You can just go ahead and have those embryos transferred in. And that saves a lot of time and stuff. The other part of that is, what do we do with those embryos? What if you responded really well and you have a dozen potential children on ice?
Wow.
Which I'm not trying to say it like, but that's the truth, right? It's potential. So they're frozen. And I've had women come back to me and say, I signed a consent in the office. It took like 5 minutes. And I was asked, what do I do if something happens to me and something happens to my husband? Where do these embryos go? Do we donate them? Do we give them to someone?
Wow.
Do we discard them? And so from a spiritual perspective, it brings in all of this added, I don't want to say pressure, but just thoughts that have to be worked out and decided upon. And it's not like there's a lot of time typically in the fertility center to discuss these things. So being able to talk out what those options are and what is going to be asked of them. Okay, so you want to freeze them. Great. They're going to freeze the best embryos, the ones they think would survive a thaw to be transferred. They're not just going to freeze all of them because that would be a waste. But I have seen, and I've had patients who have frozen like 16 embryos. Or 4 embryos, or whatever it is, and then look back and go, like, I don't know what to do with those.
Right.
And I don't know how I feel about discarding them.
Right.
And, you know, donating them. I don't even know how I feel about donating them. Like, all those kind of things.
Because then if they donate them, then they have children walking around this earth that they're going to be so curious about. I mean, even though you're blessing someone else, yes, with the donation, I mean, yeah, it's just like the level of thought-provoking questions, mm-hmm, that you have. It's such a blessing to be able to do this, but it's like for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Absolutely.
And so it's like you have this amazing thing happen, but then there's also another whole set of things you have to think about. And maybe
consider
about it. Maybe it's like no big deal for a lot of people.
Right. And, you know? And for some people, it's not a big deal. But yeah, when you're sitting in a consult room, you know, I'm first and foremost a patient advocate, and I want to empower women to be able to make the best decisions for themselves. And there is like an absolute no judgment zone. And my feeling is, if I've sat with a woman, which I've done many times, and said, I need to ask this question. If you both get divorced, who gets the embryos?
Oh,
and they're,
wow,
like, yeah, okay, let's have this conversation now.
Yeah.
And so these are all things to consider. And I'm big about sort of like, let's take it one step at a time because it's so overwhelming. But if you're someone's going through the IVF process and they're getting ready, that, you know, reading everything online and reading everybody else's, sometimes it's just really helpful to just kind of hone in on what the actual goal is. You want to bring home a beautiful, healthy baby. You want to stay safe. You want the baby to be safe. And then it goes into, how do you feel about twins? Is it, you know, it's a possibility. It happens. Is that something you really want to avoid? You want to share that with your doctor and have maybe a single embryo transfer and not transfer into. And luckily,
you transfer in two because just it's better chances of one surviving. But then if two survive, then you get
right.
Because they don't survive when transferred. Is that a normal thing?
There's so many particularities to it, right? Because it's like, did I just lose you?
No, there you are.
Did I lose you?
Nope.
Okay. There's so many particularities because maybe it depends on the quality of the embryo. Maybe the embryologist grades the embryos. So it depends. They'll talk with you. But sometimes it's a really fast conversation at the clinic and you're like, this is a huge decision. And single embryo transfers now are much more common. Thankfully, they're safer for women. The outcomes are better, but that's also because there's a lot of genetic testing done. Mm-hmm. And to get into that is like a whole other discussion of if you can do pre-genetic testing on an embryo to eliminate things like genetic abnormalities, diseases. And, you know, if that embryo is affected by cystic fibrosis, you would not transfer it. But then it gets into other things like sex selection. Mm-hmm. Is it a female or a male? You know, and so there's a lot to this. And
because you can kind of like design your child in a way. Not really. Not way of saying it, but you can pick out some things that you're looking for.
I'm like a believer in using science to eliminate, you know, suffering and disease. And so not transferring an embryo that potentially would have an incurable disease or a terminal illness is fantastic. I don't know when we get into like other tricky parts of fertility where it's like, you know, I'm really just trying for boys or girls, but sometimes that has to do with genetics.
Yeah.
For some reason, the boy, you know, boy embryos are more predisposed to having this genetic abnormality. And so the female embryos are stronger and things like that. And so it's gotten so technical in discussing it. It's really.
What a heavy, cause it's, I am all for it. Like, I think it is such a, IVF is so amazing. I've had so many friends who weren't able mm-hmm. to conceive naturally, who have been blessed with children. But it's just, it is such a big conversation. And that's why I'm so happy to be talking with you about this, because I think, you know, it's just, here we are in this modern day where this is a part of how conception happens a lot. And there's just a lot to go into it. And I think knowledge is power. And I would love to ask your opinion too about why do you think so many more children are born with autism these days? Because I feel like the numbers have increased a lot. Do you?
I think that the numbers have increased, but I think that testing and screening and awareness has increased too.
Yeah.
So maybe back in the day, like when I was growing up, it was more like they just didn't have a name for that, or they didn't have services for that, or they didn't know. And I don't want to speak to it too much because I'm ignorant in that space. I don't know that much about it, but mm-hmm. I feel like awareness has definitely come out more and there's more knowledge about it. And that, you know, we could sit around a table in downtown Nashville and have a luncheon with 40 women and we could get into like vaccines and all that kind of stuff and ages of when people are having babies and does that matter and does fertility treatments matter and all that. But that's where like I think there's amazing ways to use social media in gathering information, but there's also a really big rabbit hole, like just a deep black hole mm-hmm. where people can fall into things and there's no actual like where's the data? Whereas like the clinical information and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not saying anything one way or the other. I'm more of a sounding board for helping the person find their journey mm-hmm. in like the best way they want it to be for them and not necessarily guiding them on like what's right, what's wrong, or, you know, more of like, what do they want out of this? And it's the same with relationships. I say when you're going through fertility treatments or you're trying to get pregnant, it can become so stressful where that becomes like the job. And I'm all about sort of like advocating for keeping your relationship what you want it to be and like the focus and taking time for each other and reconnecting and all that kind of stuff. And so it's a lot, mm-hmm. but I will say, and I'm a big believer in like the mom shaming thing is not my thing at all. I'm outspoken about. I just totally think it's crazy. And I feel like whether you get pregnant at home one night, or you have gone through 16 IVF cycles, or whatever it is, when you're sitting in your OBGYN's office and you have a baby bouncing around in there, it doesn't matter how you got there.
Right.
And like, we're all moms. And if we could just support each other a little more.
I totally agree. Tell me how you drop your emotional, the emotional weight that you have from, I mean, I'm sure there's so many blessings that you have from success stories, but how do you take, how do you have self-care for yourself when you are in the middle of a journey with a woman? And like, what do you do to make sure that you stay mentally healthy and that you stay mentally on top of your game so you can be that support for this woman? Because that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's such a great question. So when I worked in New York City, I'm from New York. I worked in New York City. I was working, you know, 11 hours a day and got very burnt out for exactly that reason. It was just emotionally being tapped out and not being able to provide the level of care and not being able to invest the time I wanted to have these deep conversations. And as I got older and became a mom myself and had difficulties, that's one of the reasons I went out to be a consultant, because I was like, there's a better way for this to be accomplished. And if I became a nurse to really help people and love women's wellness and family health and everything, I want to be able to do it the right way for me.
Right.
And so one of the things I did was basically like just taking time for myself and being an active mom. Like, I love getting outdoors. I love hiking. I love playing games with my kids, like sports. I'm all about that kind of stuff. Part of it has been writing and my outlet for content creation and blogging and like just that network of people and getting out and being able to do those things and events. And I went through a divorce a couple of years ago and almost had to like build back up sort of like, do I have self-care? Like, when did I lose my own self-care? And really like find things that I enjoy doing and just taking that time and like, being active is my number one thing. Mm-hmm. I can feel myself. If I'm not getting active for, you know, 15, 20 minutes a day or just doing something like that, I can feel it in myself. And it's that whole cycle. You know, what you're saying is, how do you dedicate time and energy to someone if you don't have it yourself?
Yeah.
As moms.
Yes.
Right? As a mom with a baby, how do you do it?
Mm-hmm. Gosh, you just are so inspiring to talk to because you hit so many topics. You are a mom yourself. You are helping women become mothers. You also have gone through a divorce. What did you learn about yourself during that time period that surprised you? And how have you come into your new normal? Because it seems to me like you figured out a way to have a new normal and thrive with it. So yeah. I would love for you to inspire women who are maybe in that same situation.
Yeah, I will be 100% honest here. It's extremely hard. I was married a long time. That's what I was, you know, supposed to do, not give up. And what I actually realized was it was the opposite. If I had stayed in that, it would have been more unhealthy for everyone. And it would have been me giving up on maybe myself. Mm-hmm. And so in truth, I've just been more honest with myself, and that's given me more energy and really stayed truthful to my own voice and just knowing that this wasn't going to work out the way everyone hopes it's going to. No one goes into starting a family thinking they're going to have to do IVF. Nobody likes shots. It's terrible, but it's something you have to do, and you come out stronger.
Right.
And you come out appreciating life more. And it's the same thing with no one gets married thinking they're going to get divorced. I certainly didn't and didn't want to admit that that wasn't working out. And so the process was really, really hard. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. But on the flip side, I'm so much happier. I think my kids are doing great and they're happier. And I think my ex-husband and I went to Disney World together with the kids in February, just
cool
right before
that?
COVID hit. And like, we've had good times like that, and we've had really rough times, to be honest. And so it's just that's life. I feel like that's sort of, it's indicative of what we all go through. It's just like kind of buckle in and ride these crazy times we're in right now. It's just insane. And kind of like hold really close what you love, like the relationships you really, really invest in, and kind of hope for the best. You know, it's really basics.
That makes me kind of emotional what you just said, though, because there is no perfect way to parent. There is no perfect way to co-parent. There is no perfect way to have a baby to, and talking about school, you said you just sent your son back to school. Like, we're in a really hard time where it's like, there's no playbook for how to do this so you can raise kids who don't have problems, who don't have to go to therapy and work out all their issues. Like, you can do everything the best that you can, but it's life. And I think that the more we can just face that this is life and show up and try our best, like you said, like if you're able to go to Disney World with your ex-husband, with your kids, and you still have times that are difficult, but it's like that kind of work that you're putting in. And like, I feel like people in general that are just trying to make the best of the life that they've been given and do the best for the kids. I mean, if that is all we can do, because it's a shit show out here and we're all just trying.
It totally is.
Especially right now in the middle of this time, you know, like how
it is. I think this being more honest and, being able to talk about it. Like, it's not always fantastic. It sometimes really sucks.
Yeah.
That's okay. You know, it's amazing. One of the things is women, when they do become pregnant, it's like, it's amazing. Oh my, it's amazing. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I feel awful. I'm throwing up every morning. I feel like crap. Like, I don't want to complain. I am so blessed. I know I'm blessed. I shouldn't complain. I'm like, no. That's not fair to that person. Just because you went through this and now you don't want to seem ungrateful, it has nothing to do with that. You're feeling sick to your stomach. Like, it's okay to talk about it. It doesn't have to be glowy. It doesn't have to be perfect. And that's a huge part of things for me. It's just like kind of uncovering and like, just really, let's be real here. You know, my son started middle school today in school. I'm torn about it. I don't know how it's going to go. You know, it's one of those things. You just don't know. You're kind of hoping for the best. Everybody's trying their best.
Everyone's trying their best.
I'd like to think so.
And you live in New York, right?
I live in Franklin. I live outside of Nashville.
Oh, so you have moved to Nashville, but you were in New York. What brought you to Nashville?
Yes, and I work remotely. My ex-husband is from Tennessee.
Okay.
I went to Belmont University for nursing school.
Okay.
And then we came back down here a few years ago. And so I'm in Franklin, but I, like, all of my work has been based in New York City. So I've traveled up there like basically every other month up until recently. And my mother is still, my whole family's there. My mother's there. She's in a nursing home. She's been locked down. So like, it truly is a shit show.
Yeah.
We're all just kind of holding our breath.
So you were raising kids, though, in the beginning in New York. Is that right?
Yeah, my son was born in New York City. I was working there. We lived there for 2 years, and it's much different living there in your early 20s than, like, with a baby with a stroller.
Yeah.
And so moved out to, like, you know, the urban suburbs of New York City, Long Island. Lived there for a few years and just we were exhausted. And, so we moved down here a couple of years ago and, you know, it's great.
Yeah. So. It is. It's probably nice to just have a little space. Although there's nothing like New York. There's nothing like that energy, but also I feel like right now they've just been hit so hard. What have you noticed with your consulting, what's been happening in New York in your, when you consult with people who are there?
Yeah, it's scary. I was there in February, right before it started. And like a certain part of New York City, like Chinatown had masks on, but like nobody else was wearing masks. And then like 4 weeks later, when we got to that point in March, it was like all hell broke loose. Mm-hmm. You know, New York goes through waves in terms of like, it's been thriving for so, so long. And right now it's obviously struggling. But people there have taken it much more seriously because of what happened. And it's hard to see what's going on, you know, all over because like I said, my mom's nursing home was affected, like every nursing home pretty much. And a lot of people I know people who were sick or had passed away. And like what happened up there is insane. And I feel like the rest of the country maybe is feeling like, oh, that was in New York, like almost like 9/11. It happened in New York. It's not close enough for me to understand or feel that what happened. So to me, it's sort of still kind of,
yeah.
And so her nursing home has not been able to open back up and allow visitors because they have to have 28 days of no positive COVID cases in patients or staff, and they can't get there. Like wow. They were on day 28 this week and they were supposed to open and someone tested positive. So they have to start all over. So she's been locked down since March.
How has her spirits been? Has she been able to stay happy or has it been depressing? Because I really do feel like the nursing homes have really gotten like the hard end of this stick. That's not the right, the shit end of the stick, really. Like, because they
are, yeah.
They're just locked up in their rooms and they can't leave. Has she been able to?
I mean, they locked it down. Like her.
Has she been able to find happiness?
Okay. I mean, it's. You know, FaceTime is a good thing. FaceTime is really helpful. And we make a lot of jokes. We keep things light, but it's definitely been hard. I'm used to being there, you know, for work and also to see her like every other month, pretty much. So this is like the first time in a long time I haven't been up there. And even for me, I feel it. My kids haven't seen her since Christmas. They're really close. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's different for us that we didn't go there this summer on a family trip. And we don't know, like we're talking about the holidays already. And we're like, okay, maybe we'll get to go for Thanksgiving. Then I have the kids for New Year's, like maybe we'll get to. And I'm thinking to myself, how are we going to be able to go for Thanksgiving? It's going to be, mm-hmm. So we're just going to play it by ear and see.
Have you been able to find any silver lining in what's happening in the world with COVID? Everything's just blowing up right now. Have you been able to find any silver lining?
Yeah, so I love to travel. And so I was like, you know, this is so hard and this and this. And I believe there is a silver lining in it has dialed things back to like basics of like enjoying time together and not having this crazy schedule and not being able to do certain things in a weird way has really made me slow down and appreciate stuff, which I'm so thankful for. I've appreciated the slowdown. And like we've been going to parks to have like picnics, like take out dinner and like hang out in the park and socially distance and like hang out. And like, when's the last time I hung out in a park?
Yeah.
Like it's crazy. And then you're there and it's like, this is wonderful. This is so enjoyable. This is great. Why don't we do this ever? And so, things like that, just like really investing and having conversations with people and being able to spend a little extra time and just kind of like hunkering down and making chocolate chip cookies. Because chocolate chip cookies make everything better.
Totally agree. You said earlier on this interview that when you were working as like a nurse practitioner, I guess you were working in hospitals, it burnt you out.
Registered nurse. Yeah.
Registered nurse. Yeah. It burnt you out and you could feel that. And then you felt guided to start your consulting business. What guides you? How do you know what you're supposed to do next and when you're supposed to stop something? Because I feel like a lot of people need help knowing when to trust themselves and what that mm-hmm. actually feels like and when it's actually that inner voice or whatever it is that you know within yourself. Like, what is that for you? And how do you know when you have to listen to it? And how do you know what it's telling you to do?
Yeah, the only thing I could say, and I feel this way strongly about a lot of women and friends and moms, and is that somewhere in there, in the soul, there's like our spirit, our real natural spirit that speaks to us. And it fights for us, even when we're fighting against it. Maybe it's because like what we're supposed to do and how we're supposed to be and like breaking down all of the crap that is what we're supposed to kind of, and really listen to ourselves. Like, my natural instinct has always been my gut will scream at me if I'm doing something that just doesn't feel right. Or like I was in an RN position that just wasn't the right fit for me. And it was like I had a lack of passion about it. I was like, I don't like how the care is being delivered here. I can't do this. Like, I couldn't let myself do it. I was mm-hmm. like, I have to even though it doesn't look good, even though it seems wrong, even though I'm going to take slack for it, I can't do it. Like, I have to.
You just couldn't find the
passion
for it.
Just listen to myself.
Even though this job was, it felt like a perfect job, a great job. Like, you should want to be in this job.
It looked good.
Looked good, but like, you just could not muster up the passion. Does your gut feel a certain way? Does it feel uneasy? Does it feel like burning? Yeah. Do you get like a physical feeling?
I do. I'm very, very, so I'm like very in touch with my, in tune with my body. And I'm always saying that, like, as we get older, sometimes we distance ourselves from listening to what our body is telling us. Like, for God's sake, if we're tired, go to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shut off the phone. And so, I can feel it. I can just feel it, and being able to get back in touch with that. And like, I know it starts to sound very, but like, center yourself and ground yourself and do the things, as ridiculous as they might be, that do that, like throwing a ball outside with my son and doing things like that, that really put me back in touch with like who I am and what I enjoy, is very, very helpful. And I'm also very admittedly, it takes me time to process things and I have to talk it out. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have that time, if I don't dedicate time to sit and just think through certain things that have happened, I don't allow myself that opportunity, I just start falling behind and like acknowledging what I really need to be doing or what focus I need to have. And like going back into that centered focus of like, again, for women who might be like, you know, I want to have a family and I want to start building a family, but like, I could probably wait a couple of years, but like, you know, I should start. And like, there's all this, what I should do, what other people are going to think, or, you know, I've had older, women. So I'm 45. So let me just say that. So, I've had older women who are above 35 who are like, I think I'm high risk at this point because I'm old. And I'm like, that's not old. And whatever has brought that into the mindset, like, release it. There's not an assumption that there's going to be difficulties now. Yes, as we get older, our eggs diminish, the quality diminishes. There's no doubt about that. We know that. When we're 20, we have a lot of eggs that are great. And when we're 40, we don't have very many eggs that are great. But there's wiggle room in that. And I think just like the pressure, you know, friends' pressure. I live in an area where everyone seems married. Life is perfect for everyone. And it's something that can get under your skin and kind of get to you if you think about it and let yourself do that. And it can seem that way. And I have yet to meet a single person when I finally become friends with them or comes to me with something like a fertility issue where like, oh, everybody's got their stuff.
Yes.
Everybody's got their struggles.
Yes.
Nothing is perfect. And that's okay. Like, that's how it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be this like rosy colored thing. And so that's where I get into like, we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. After all of these interviews that I've done with all different types of interesting people, like, I have come to that same conclusion that nobody is without a journey and a struggle and without their own path and things that they're having to like overcome, work through. Like, it's just nobody, we create. And that's why I love being able to have conversations and expose truth, because we don't need to feel like somebody's out there who has it all figured out. That's false advertising and it doesn't do anybody any good, you know?
Totally. Totally. And it's one of those things that, you know, in New York, where the office was, where I worked in particular, a lot of times it was very successful, high profile, recognizable women who either through careers or whatever it was, there was a lot of success. And it was like, okay, well, now I'm ready to have a baby. Why is it not working? And coming to acceptance of that is very, or what did I do to put myself in this position? Like, were my priorities all off? And like, why can't I have everything? And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, instead of thinking we can't have everything, maybe if we just shift our mindset a little bit to what do we want? Like, what's most important to us 10 years ago is not necessarily applicable today. Mm-hmm. You know, we grow, we evolve, we're supposed to. Things are supposed to be different. And so being able to kind of gut check ourselves and kind of let that guide us, I think is really helpful.
And man, you bring up a great point, because men don't have to worry about when they're going to have a baby. They don't have to worry about their careers. They don't have to worry about slowing down their pace. They don't have to worry about carrying the child and slowing down their work pace. You know, there's no physical restrictions, but women,
totally.
Women do, even though this is such a more progressive world that we live in, and women are definitely
right.
getting the opportunity to show that we are absolutely more than capable to be high executives and do all sorts of amazing things. But we still run into that same age-old dilemma of, if I want to be a power career woman and climb this ladder and really compete in this high intense world to get to the top,
yep.
a lot of times having a baby totally gets the back burner. And then when you finally do get around to it, because, I mean, let's be real, it takes like your 20s and your 30s to build your career. And then you finally totally. Get to like your late yeah. 30s and you're like, okay, I've really established myself. I think I can
yep.
make some time for a baby. And then all of a sudden it's not happening. So that is like a real struggle. And like, what have you learned about walking that walk with women who are in that struggle?
That's where it comes down to, this might not be what was hoped for or expected, but this is what it is. Let's work with what we've got. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not focus on what we can't do and what we can't control. Let's focus on what we have right here, right now. Let's like problem solve, basically. Mm-hmm. And it is really hard sometimes when that happens. And I can tell you the flip side of that is when you get on the other side, you've had the baby and now you're trying to struggle. And this is so relevant right now to what's going on with schooling and how parents are going to work and have their kids at home and all this kind of stuff. And like, sort of this like waving the white flag of like, wait a second, like we got a problem here. I can't keep working. I'm going to lose my job so I can help my kid. Like, how's that going to work? In the same mindset, I've had women who have gone on to achieve successful pregnancy, have healthy babies, and then have to go back to their jobs that are very, you know, high demand and hire a nanny and be lucky enough to be able to hire a nanny, let's say in New York City. And then resent the nanny because the nanny's getting to stay home with their baby and they're going to work.
God,
and now they're stuck.
And
they worked so hard for it. And you don't realize like, okay. And that's where like, I really go up with like almost mapping out, like, what are the goals here? What is ideal? You get one ticket here on this ride of life. What are ultimately what we're trying to do, you know, because, otherwise, sometimes you go through the motions and you get stuck and you turn around and it's 10 years later and you're like, wait a second, what did I just miss? You know, my entire
right.
30s or my entire... And so it's a whole... Just really talking that out sometimes helps.
And so that's what you do. You actually take the time to get to the core of what this woman is wanting. Like, what is she really wanting? Not what she thinks she wants, not what she is trying to keep up with because it feels like what she needs to do, but like, what does she actually really want to make her happy?
Yeah. And I'm all about empowering women, whether it's being a patient advocate or just for themselves, of, you know, a solo mom who's like a single woman who's just going to do this because she's ready. And I'm like, go for it. You can totally do this, and talk about that and just kind of whatever's best for them. And it involves, if they're doing IVF, it's like, let's go on FaceTime and do injection teaching and go through all that. And like all the technical part of it, that's fine. But as far as the bigger picture, I think sometimes that's where it's really useful to spend a lot of time thinking about that, you know?
Yes.
And again, that might change as time goes on based on the experiences we have, which it should.
Mm-hmm.
So,
man, yep. There are some hard questions, and it's just like being that, I hadn't really ever even thought about that struggle of a woman who's worked her whole life to build her career. And then she finally does get pregnant and it's something that she's wanted more than anything, but she's got to keep the career going. And so she doesn't get to raise her kid. I mean, that's hard. That's heavy stuff, but it's such a,
right.
It's such
well,
a
and it's interesting, like, you know, when I've, yes. And it's such a, the dichotomy between, you know, you have one woman who is using everything she's got in her savings to go through one IVF cycle, let's say. And gets pregnant, but has to go back to work in 6 weeks. And is like, oh, I see that woman in the waiting room. If only I was her. She has this, you know, she's a lawyer probably, and she can afford a nanny. But yet they're in the same position. Isn't that crazy? And like, they don't know each other. They don't realize it. And to see that sometimes is like mind-blowing, because really everyone is struggling with the same stuff, more or less. It just is presented differently, you know. The woman who's working and can't get time off just to go get her blood work done and her ultrasound because she's going to get in trouble from work versus, you know, the high-powered attorney who can't get time off from court to get to the, it's the same thing. It's just, it looks different, but it's the same actual inner struggle. And so it's, that's where I get into the whole, like, everyone just help, be kind, help each other out. I know it sounds so hokey, and at this point it's become like catchphrases, but I really believe in it, like just putting out the good vibes.
Because you have literally seen from the most success, financially successful woman to a woman who is struggling to make ends meet that particular moment in time. You have seen it all, and you have seen the struggles are the same. What is your grand takeaway from what you have experienced about humanity?
The whole thing for me is just, you know, and I say it all different ways, but like playing the cards you're dealt with, you know, and not focusing so much on why you were dealt the cards and all that kind of stuff that you can dig into, but just like, what are you going to do about it? Like, this is it. You know, I've in kind of another kind of direction. I was a hospice nurse for my dad before he passed away and was able to kind of go through that journey with him. And it taught me so much, hardest thing ever, but taught me so much about like, wait a second. At the end of the day, we are all going to get to the finish line here and we're going to look back and how do we want that to be? Mm. What do we want that to be? And like, you can't necessarily wait. Like you have this moment, we have this moment right now. That's all we know. And like really embracing that and accepting all of that.
What was that like to walk through the final days with your dad being his primary caregiver as a nurse? Like what is that like?
Yeah, it was, so I graduated from Belmont and moved back to New York because he had been diagnosed with this terminal cancer, went from like being a marathon runner to stage 4 cancer and did not have a good prognosis from the start and really was able, I was a fertility nurse at the time, I was working, and when it became time to take him home, he wanted to pass away at home and be part of hospice, I took a leave of absence from the fertility center to stay home with him. And I've talked to friends who have unfortunately experienced that as well and wanted to be equipped with the knowledge of what to expect. And it really reshaped who I am. It really had completely changed me.
What changed about you?
Just appreciating the little things. You know, you don't miss these big, big moments and sometimes these big trips and all this like great stuff and everything so much as like these tiny little moments that you just kind of like ache for. And like, that's the stuff that I really try to focus in on. Like little moments with my kids that I like, nothing particular going on. It's a random Saturday. We were just arguing, but now we're sitting on the couch and I'm like, that's what I'm going to look back on. Yeah. Like that little.
Man, gosh, you have some major wisdom. Okay. So
so deep here. What?
I've started to realize it's my personality. My husband tells me all the time.
Me too.
He's like, Caroline, we will be at a party. And then all of a sudden you're over there talking to someone and they're telling you their whole life story. I'm telling you.
That's exactly it.
That they've never told anyone. And I'm like, I know, I don't even mean to do it, but like, I just am attracted.
I much prefer that.
I'm attracted to deep conversations because I have such an aching and a yearning in my heart to uncover truth. Mm-hmm. And by truth, I mean, I just want to know how other people are experiencing their life because this life is so confusing and I just need information from people.
I think just the fact that you're honest, I've been told this, the more honest you are, the more honest they can be with you. You're like an open door. And that's really, you know, something that I think invites people to kind of let it all out, which is great.
Well, and that's how like you and I, like we've just, I've been meeting people over Instagram lately, which I guess it's something in the universe and where I've just been finding fascinating people over Instagram. I just had a podcast interviewer with someone who's a big manifester. Her name is Schwartzrock. And then like I met you over Instagram and I'm like, but I knew I was drawn to you right away. It wasn't even like a big question of like, oh, let me like super analyze this. I'm like, no, I know I want to talk to you. Like, I checked you out for 0.2 seconds. I'm like, yes, let's do this. I mean, what is that?
I don't know, but I have to say that when I started blogging back in the day and social media, I have made amazing friends through social media. Just really wonderful, wonderful people. And that way, I absolutely love it.
Yes.
It's just such a great special connector. And then when you get to see, like, get together in person, you're just like, it's like you've been friends all along. It's amazing. So I'm a fan of it.
Okay, so Linda, tell everyone where they can find you and what your services are that people can utilize.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. That's the easiest way, at Unboxed Mom. And send me a private message. A lot of times that's a lot easier than commenting or something like that, which I totally understand. If you have questions about naturally conceiving, fertility, IVF, you want to talk that out, I'm happy to do that. And just reach out. Parenting questions, pregnancy questions, early motherhood, all that good stuff.
And I love that you are willing to, because this is something that I feel like we're missing from the actual, like, doctor's appointments, is you have such a limited time when you're in those appointments to just get the business done. But really, there's so many deep questions that, like, are life-changing that we need to talk out with someone who's a trained professional and be able to express our feelings and our fears and our hopes and our unknowns and all of it. And I feel like you're offering such a great service and being that voice that people can talk out the big stuff with, because it's overwhelming and we need help.
Yeah. And I totally purposefully have kept it from being like, you know, take this course and buy my ebook and do all that kind of stuff. I don't work that way. It doesn't work for me because it starts to feel, something just doesn't vibe with me with that. So I just kind of do it on a more personal level and keep it real like that.
I love that. Okay. So in all of my, also, how did you come up with Unboxed Mom?
Oh, so Unboxed Mom is the whole, like, unboxing what motherhood should be and what it actually really is, and, like, showing the real truth to it, and, like, whatever that is for someone, like, jumping out of the box of, like, what we think we're all supposed to be as moms, and let's be real.
I love that. Okay, so I end all of my episodes with Leave Your Light, which is, what do you want people to know? What do you want to get real with people? What do you want to share? What do you want to leave with everyone who's listened to this interview?
The biggest thing for me is, and just related to what I do, is just really taking control of what you want things to be, what you want your relationship to be, what you want your family life to be, your career, whatever it is. Listen to what your that inner voice, listen to it. Because, like, once you start listening to it, you won't be able to stop, and you'll just become stronger and stronger. And whatever we're talking about, whatever topic, that's, to me, my biggest thing.
I love that. Linda, thank you so much for joining me. This was so educational and amazing, and I just appreciate the conversation.
Me too. So much fun. Thank you.
Thank you.